Joining us today is Kim Cavan. She is an award-winning freelance writer and editor. She's a staunch advocate for independent contractors. Kim has been sounding the alarm on overreaching labor regulations that could potentially hurt freelancers in America. And we are going to be welcoming Kim on right now. Kim, hi, how are you?
Hello from my kitchen in New Jersey, which is not as fancy as your studio with the big cool neon sign.
Yeah. Oh, it's not as fancy as it looks. It's like literally a corner in my upstairs room. I do a lot of freelance work myself and decided to go the podcasting route, was in radio for a while. And I said, you know what? I am going to be a 1099 worker, work various gigs, and I make my living that way. So this is why I really wanted to have you on. And it's a very modest corner, you know, so it's not as cool as you'd think. But Kim, thanks for coming on. We've talked about this with our audience before. Mark Avalar had joined us and we talked about the Uber and Lyft drivers in Chicago, how they are working it out at a state legislature legislative level. With the Uber and Lyft drivers, as far as them wanting some more employee benefits, despite them being the 1099 contractors and contractors. So we talked about that with Mark Avalar, but I wanted to have you on. Why don't you set this up for our listeners? Tell us a little bit about 1099 work. You're a 1099 contractor, probably yourself, and just the basics of this alarm that you are sounding as it pertains to these overreaching labor regulations that are really hurting freelance workers and 1099 employees, if you will. So can you tell us a little bit just the basics of what you're sounding the alarm about?
Sure. So when you think about how we all earn a living in the United States of America, since the day this nation was founded, we have all had the freedom to hang out a shingle and become our own boss. That's never been in question before, that should be allowed. You have choices, right? You can, if you think an employee role, you want a traditional job, that's fine. Go do that. Most people choose to do that. Other people, maybe a little more entrepreneurial, maybe they already have a traditional job and they just want a side hustle as an entrepreneur, which is what my parents did for years. They were school teachers, but they had side hustles on the weekends. Or you're somebody like me who chooses to make your whole living as a consultant or a freelancer. What's under attack is that choice, that freedom to be our own boss. That's what these folks have been trying to take away for years. It started many, many years ago. The most recent wave of this that has really grown into a crescendo started in California about a half a dozen years ago, where they passed a law called Assembly Bill 5. And if you were to look in the media about that bill, you'd see a lot of what you just said, Uber, Lyft, Uber, Lyft, Uber, Lyft. They convinced everybody it was about Uber and Lyft, but that's not what the bill was. The bill was about everybody who earns a living as an independent contractor. And when you look at that group of people, rideshare, app-based delivery drivers, they're less than 10% of the independent contractors in this country. Independent contractors are everybody from real estate agents to financial advisors to owner-operator truckers, translators, interpreters, graphic designers, wedding photographers, people like me. I've been a freelance writer and editor for over two decades now. So there were hundreds and hundreds, over 600, in fact, professions identified that got hit out in California. They had to pass a second law that exempted either partially or fully more than 100 professions. And even that's not working out right. But they're not letting up on trying to do this all across the country. They then tried to inject it into federal law. They talked about the possibility of injecting it through federal regulatory rulemaking. They tried to pass copycat bills in New York. They introduced one in New Jersey. You mentioned your audience heard about what's going on in Illinois. And right now in my home state of New Jersey, they're coming back for a second bite at the apple through regulatory rulemaking at our state labor department, trying to impose it on us all without anything like what we saw of a legislative process last time. And it's drawing incredible backlash. Everybody knows it's wrong. Everybody knows this is not about what they claim it's about. They're saying it's about helping people who are misclassified, meaning they should be employees, but they're being treated as independent contractors. They're saying it's greedy companies not paying benefits they're supposed to pay. That's not what this regulatory language does. This regulatory language attacks independent contractors. It doesn't create any jobs. And that's why we're fighting it and demanding that it stops.
Mm. Now, you mentioned AB 5. For our listeners, this is something in California. And can you tell me how AB 5 was almost like supplement legislation to the ABC test, which is something that's in California too. Can you kind of talk about both those and how they work together?
Right. So in order to distinguish between who is an employee and who is an independent contractor, you need some kind of regulatory language, right? If you are A, B, and C, you're an employee. If you're D, E, and F, you're an independent contractor. And there's all these different tests out there that exist that over the years have done this. The ABC test is almost a century old. They call it the ABC test because it's got three parts, A, B, and C. But what's been happening in recent years is the folks who want to take away our freedom to be our own bosses have started editing it and changing it and finagling it and taking out a word here and putting in a word there. And anybody who follows government and has spent any time in the dark bowels of bureaucracy knows that when you start monkeying with that kind of language, you can do a lot of damage really fast. That's what these folks are doing. So what happened in California was there was a court case where the California's highest court put this version of the ABC test into a ruling and specifically said in that ruling that the legislature could then really do whatever it wanted. And what the legislature chose to do, led by a card-carrying member of the Teamsters Union, which wants access to independent contractors to try to unionize everyone, what she did was put forward this bill. She was an assembly member at the time. The bill was called Assembly Bill 5. And what the bill did was expand on that court ruling and apply this edited version of the ABC test across different parts of the law so that it hit everybody, accountants, doctors, lawyers. That's why they had to do all the exemptions, because so many different professions got caught up in this net that this ABC test was never, ever, ever supposed to apply to. And once they got it through in California, they decided to try to make that the model for the nation. And here we are today, a half a dozen years later, fighting it all over the place.
Incredible. And, you know, maybe I'll ask you to be speculative. Why do you think unions, and this seems to be something that's pushed by unions a lot, is to this attack on 1099 contract work. Why is that?
There's no speculation needed. We know why. The author of Assembly Bill 5, Lorena Gonzalez, out in California, who is no longer in the legislature, she's now the head of the California Labor Federation, AFL-CIO. She tweeted at the time, first we get AB5, then we organize workers into a union. Said it clear as day. This is the goal. What we just saw in the state of New Jersey, we had a public hearing in June. It was 3-1 opposition against this. The only people who testified in favor were either on a union payroll or they were with organizations that are strongly affiliated to unions, like think tanks, things like that. When I testified before the United States Senate just last month, the only people at the table who were for this were either on the union payroll or with an organization affiliated with strong union ties. There is no question why this is happening. The union organizers, and we have to be clear, Kat, most of the rank and file, when they hear about this, they can't believe it. They shake their heads. They think this is as crazy as we do. It's the people at the top, in particular of the unions, that are aligned with folks like the Democratic Socialists of America. It was Bernie Sanders at that Senate hearing championing this when I was in Washington last month. The reason they want it is because union membership is at an all-time low. They don't know how to fix that. And so instead of evolving their business model to make themselves more attractive and make themselves something people actually choose to join, what they're trying to do is use government power to make it impossible for us to earn a living another way. That's why I think it's so wrong. It's not that I'm against folks who want to go into an apprenticeship and a trade, and maybe they want to join a plumber's union, whatever you want to do. Go crazy. Have, you know, live your best American dream life. Go for it. That's fantastic. But don't tell me that I can't hang out a shingle and be an entrepreneur. That's not how government is supposed to work. We're supposed to have all pathways open to achieve the American dream. That's what we are fighting for when we say we're fighting to stop this freelance busting. We're fighting to keep open our pathway to the American dream so we get the right to choose how we earn a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, it seems like there's an attack on like people who don't want to assemble. Right. We have the right to assemble, but we also have the right not to assemble. So it's like you can't force me into a group if I don't want to be a part of the group. So you brought up New Jersey and I want to go there and kind of dig that up a little bit, because they are fundamentally changing and they've done this proposal. So start at the very beginning, how this kind of was proposed, how it was amended, and your fight in New Jersey and the national implications of that fight in New Jersey.
Okay. So New Jersey actually started a half dozen years ago too. What happened was after California got that Assembly Bill 5 through, the what I call the freelance busting brigade, the freelance busting brigade decided to roll this thing out all across the country. And New Jersey was next on their hit list. They were going to states with trifecta Democratic Party control where they could try to push this kind of thing through. So New Jersey introduced a copycat bill back in 2019. It was sponsored by the guy who at the time was our state Senate president. His name is Steve Sweeney. He was also vice president of the Iron Workers Union and the highest ranking state level graduate ever of the New Jersey AFL-CIO candidate school. That's who sponsored the bill in New Jersey. We had about 6 weeks or so of a heads up. What happened was a professional organization I'm a member of called the American Society of Journalists and Authors. Their president, or former, I think he was the former president at the time, published a thing in our newsletter saying, hey, this thing's happening in California. This is bad. Freelance writers are losing their business because of this bill called Assembly Bill, this law, Assembly Bill 5. Everybody should pay attention to this. So what happened here in New Jersey, I'm sitting on my couch one night scrolling on social media, and I see a Facebook post that says, holy bleep, AB 5 is coming to New Jersey. And I went, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't know what that means, but I know that's very bad since 100% of my income is as a freelance writer and editor. So a bunch of us made a Facebook group, got together, gave it a name called Fight for Freelancers, started writing some op-eds as best as we could figure out how to write them at the time. And we all went down to the Trenton State House and testified. Turned out so many people showed up, it was standing room only at that public hearing for more than 4 hours straight. And if I'm remembering correctly, it was only four people who testified in favor. Again, people affiliated with unions. But it was bakers, musicians, every possible kind of independent contractor you could imagine saying, whoa, 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 don't do this. This is hurting people in California. And there was just enough anecdotal evidence at the start of Assembly Bill 5 that our legislature in New Jersey listened to us. And they thought, whoa, maybe this seems bad. These people are pretty angry and they're good at talking in front of cameras. They make media for a living. We should probably rethink this. That was the correct choice. So now we have a half a dozen years worth of evidence to prove that we were right. There's so much evidence, it's unbelievable that we were correct. And this is horrible policy that should be fitted with cement shoes and dumped in the Atlantic Ocean, Tony Soprano style. But instead of that, what's happening is our State Department of Labor here in New Jersey, which is run by a guy who was appointed as a favorite of the unions. You can go back and look at the press coverage from when he was appointed as labor commissioner. He has now said, we're going to make a new rule that says, even though we're not changing the words in the law of New Jersey, we're going to interpret the law in a way that's very close to California's Assembly Bill 5. And so nifty trick, right? Yeah. So what you've seen in New Jersey is an unprecedented now amount of pushback, where it's not just lawyer after lawyer after lawyer coming out and saying, whoa, buddy, you're out of line. We've got Democrats and Republicans in our state house, state senators, state assembly members, both sides of the aisle coming out and saying, yo, brother, this seems to be outside the bounds of existing law. This is outside the bounds of statute. This is outside the bounds of case law. You don't get to just pick and choose and delete words out of the law and make the law whatever you want it to be in terms of who can be their own boss. That's not how this is supposed to work. And our legislators have gotten so riled up now that one of them has, or three of them now, have already started a process where they are going to introduce, I believe it's a joint resolution is how it works in our state legislature, that's going to try to nullify this thing if the governor doesn't back off and rescind it. So you've got the whole world screaming now, this is bad for people. Nobody wants this except these union organizers. Stop what you're doing. But our governor just yesterday went on TV and said, well, there's passion on both sides, yada, yada, yada. We're going to let the process play out a little longer. So we have to keep fighting, because we all know who pays his campaign bills, and it's a lot of union money. That's the problem.
Well, and what's really scary about that is the implications for the rest of the country. If that were to go through, right, you guys are going to continue your fight, which is great. But if this rule were to go through where it was the Department of Labor, right, where they were like,
Department of Labor, yes,
we're going to do this nifty trick. You're stepping on the toes of the legislature, and this sets a really nasty precedent, because now you're talking about separation of powers. I'd imagine it'd go up through the courts. You know, you mentioned the lawyers, though, hopefully.
There's so many lawyers filing public comments. It's incredible. And to your point, Kat, what we saw after California, they immediately put legislation forward in Congress based on that, called the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. That same regulatory language is buried in that PRO Act. It's not so much buried, it's up towards the top, but it's in that PRO Act bill. They came within 3 votes of getting that thing into law when President Biden was in office. So we know this is what they want at the federal level. What's so insidious about what's happening right now in New Jersey is if you read what the attorneys are saying, they're basically saying New Jersey is trying to show everybody else in the country who wants to hurt independent contractors how to do it without actually changing the law, how to do it by just interpreting what's on the page differently. That is what the lawyers are saying is going on here. And that is why we are all screaming bloody murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting. I talked about this, folks. You guys can go find the show archived on the YouTube channel. Subscribe to Conservative Cat. Also, Kim, you have a blog. This is a great chance to plug your blog. I want to make sure our listeners can go read your freelance busting articles. Where do we go to find out more about that?
So freelancebusting.com is my Substack. The term freelance busting, we spent a couple years trying to explain all this to people. And I can tell you, Kat, if you want to be the most unpopular person at a party, go up to somebody and say, hey, you want to talk about regulatory language used to determine the difference between independent contractors and employees? Let me tell you, you will be the least popular person in the room really darn fast. So we were looking for some kind of terminology. We needed language to help people understand what this is, because they're attacking something that most of us take for granted. Freedom to hang out a shingle and be your own boss, right? It sounds like fake news the first time you hear it. That could never happen. That would never be possible in the United States of America. But that's what they're actually doing. And so one day I was out in my backyard clearing out the leaves. It was fall. The leaves were coming down all over the place. I was clearing up the leaves. And I was listening to a podcast where somebody asked the guest, tell me something about what union busting is. And this guy rattled off a list of like 45 things that he felt all constituted union busting. And I just had this epiphany. Why don't we just call all this stuff freelance busting? That way we don't have to explain to people the difference between legislation, regulatory rulemaking, departments of labor, committees in Congress. You know, people's eyes were glazing over. When I put the term freelance busting on Twitter, it was like a light switch. People understood what it was immediately. And it's now at the point where when the there's a bill in Congress right now called the Modern Worker Empowerment Act that would help fix this at the federal level. When the House of Representatives sponsor of that bill pushed it forward and they got it out of committee a couple of weeks ago, he used the term freelance busting. When I testified in the U.S. Senate last month, Senator Tommy Tuberville asked me to explain to the world, what is freelance busting? Can you tell us what this is? And I can tell you, after that hearing was over, I heard from the committee chairman's staff, they're getting all kinds of requests from lawmakers now in Washington, help us understand what freelance busting is, because this sounds really bad. So that language did the trick. And again, I guess I just have to say, it was really dumb of these people to attack those of us who make media for a living. We're pretty good at this kind of stuff, and we're not gonna let them take our livelihoods away.
Yeah. And then you have blog. How do I access it, right?
Anybody can go to freelancebusting.com. It's free. I don't charge any money for it. I'm doing it because I don't see the media covering this the way they should. And I say that as a person who has in-depth understanding. I was a daily newspaper editor. I hold a journalism degree from the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is considered one of the best in the country, if not the world. And I graduated back at a time when we were actually taught how to be real journalists and not activists in the newsrooms. We were taught how to try to tell the truth, get to the truth, and publish the truth fairly. I don't see a whole lot of that going on with this issue in the news, like so many other things nowadays. So I started the freelancebusting.com Substack as a place where people can go to see for themselves, this is what's happening. This is what this means. This is what that means. This is why this matters. And they can learn and understand why this policy area is so inherently important to our fundamental freedom to earn a living. That's what's being attacked. That's what we're trying to stop. That's what I'm trying to help people understand with that Substack.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. And, you know, I was telling our listeners that I was talking about this, and it's archived on the podcast here, folks. Semi-truck drivers, you had mentioned that they're 1099 employees, and particularly in California, some of these trucking companies that are based there, you're hearing from people in the trucking community and industry that some companies, what they're doing is they're really W-2 employees, they're classifying them as 1099, and like because the language, like you said, has been changed, you know, you've got the Dems, the freelance busters, you know, and it is a bipartisan or a nonpartisan issue at this point, because there are Democrats who have come to their senses and said, hey, this is no good. But you've got this freelance busting crowd saying like, hey, well, we don't want them to exploit these greedy companies to exploit the workers. Well, that's actually what's happening in California, because they have something like AB5, and they've changed the ABC test and like little words here and there. I think a lot of these, the very thing that they are worried about happening is happening because of what they've done to the changes of ABC test. So you've got semi-truck companies who, you know, are exploiting their workers. They do pay them as 1099. They should, you know, under the old ABC test, they would have been considered a full-time employee, but they're kind of exploiting, they're driving them past their hours and they're not really their own boss. They have to do exactly what the company says as far as like, hey, you know, your electronic logging devices, I want you to, you know, log out, log back in, and we're going to erase it and you're going to keep driving, you know. And if the company is mandating you to keep driving, then you're an employee of the company, right? You don't get to drive on your own time and you're not really your own business. But they're able to do that in California because of the changes. So I feel like, you know, the very thing that they want to combat, or say they want to combat, evil corporations who won't give the proper employee benefits to 1099s, is actually happening in the states where they've attacked 1099 language and regulations, labor or adjusted labor regulations. Am I right?
So here's how I think about this, and not just in trucking, in all industries. Mm-hmm. I think of it with a very New Jersey attitude, which is it doesn't matter how we write the laws. Scumbags are going to scumbag, right? That's what scumbags do. And if you are a company that is going to cheat and lie and steal and hurt people and not treat your employees correctly, you're going to do that no matter how we write the laws. We're going to have to catch you. We're going to have to hold you accountable because what you're doing is wrong. No doubt about that. The thing that is so interesting about the trucking industry is when you really drill down into that industry, it is an unbelievably broad industry of all different kinds of trucking. It can be used to mean anything from a guy delivering envelopes to a guy hauling goods at the ports. And those ports are important, right? Not to just to independent contractors, but to all of us. The ports are where everything from food and medicine, all kinds of supply chain, everything, the ports are where those things come in and the truckers unload them. Well, we heard testimony here in New Jersey in June. 77% of the truckers at the Port of New York and New Jersey, 77% of them are owner-operator truckers. They're independent contractors. So if you shut down the ability to be an independent contractor, what the testimony was from the trucking people, the trucking industry experts here in New Jersey, is that you will cripple the Port of New York and New Jersey. You will cripple the regional supply chain. You will cripple the state's economy. This isn't my language. This is what people from the port were saying. And it wasn't just the trucking people. It was the shipping people. Witness after witness after witness saying, stop what you're doing. This is crazy town. This is nuts. What are you people even talking about? But then we had witness after witness from the unions and the union affiliated organizations saying, we have to stop these greedy, evil corporations. Exactly what you just said is the narrative they keep putting forward. And I want to be clear, Kat, scumbags are going to scumbag. There are employees being called independent contractors who shouldn't be. They're getting screwed out of their benefits. They're getting hosed out of things like overtime, like you mentioned. That shouldn't be allowed. That should absolutely be prosecuted. But we've had ways to prosecute that for a lot of years, and it can be done without attacking the vast majority of independent contractors who study after study, all the government data shows we are choosing to be our own bosses. We are choosing to be entrepreneurs. We don't have to attack the entrepreneurs of America in order to fix that problem.
Yes, yes. I'm so glad you said that because I do think that they're scum is going to scum. I love that. There are. But the Department of Labor, get your heads out of your butts, right? And enforce the rules that are already on the books, you know.
We should talk about just how many independent contractors say, you know, you asked, why is this happening? Why can't the union organizers fix this on their own? Well, when you look at U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data, what it shows year after year after year after year, such a big percentage of independent contractors prefer this way of earning a living. It's not even an 80-10 issue. It's not even 80-20. It's 90-10. It's a 90-10 issue. Fewer than 1 in 10 independent contractors say they would prefer a traditional job, let alone a regular boss and a union boss. We prefer to be our own bosses. The vast majority of us, the vast majority of us want nothing to do with traditional jobs. You pair that with Gallup data. I think most people would think Gallup data is pretty reliable. It's not a source that's fudging one way or the other. Usually they're just surveying people and figuring out what goes on. Well, the statistic that the freelance busters always cite, and Bernie Sanders did it in front of the US Senate just last month when I was sitting 10 feet away from the guy. He said, look, about 70% of Americans, according to Gallup, say they support unions. Therefore, we need to change all these rules to get independent contractors into unions. That's not what the Gallup research says. If you look at that Gallup research that he cited, he was cherry picking that data. Yes, about 70% of Americans said they support unions. Just like I said to you at the beginning of this show, if people want to take a traditional job and join a union, they should be able to do that. I support that. However, that same Gallup data, they asked people who are already employees, who are already eligible to join unions. They asked non-union employees, do you wish to join a union? And Kat, while 70% of Americans said they support the existence of unions, 80% of people currently eligible to join them either want nothing to do with them or are at best neutral on the subject. So there is no popular uprising among non-union employees. There is no popular uprising among independent contractors saying we want this. This is coming from union organizers trying to exert their political power in order to impose this on us all. That's what's happening. That's why it's wrong. And it literally is threatening our entire supply chain at this point.
Yeah. And the more union members, and I want to make this clear for our audience, the more membership dues, right? So at the end of the day, it's all about the money. So,
the rank and file, if you talk to them, they think this is nuts too. And I want to be really, really clear about that. You know, we've seen in politics, I know your show covers a lot of politics. You've seen folks like the head of the Teamsters Union become more aligned with the Republicans than with the Democrats lately. Rank and file are just learning to make, they're trying to make a living just like all the rest of us. You know, I'm a working person. I've got a mortgage. I drive a 2010 Honda. I'm by no means some fat cat billionaire anything. But at the end of the day, it's the people at the top who have made some choices about, instead of actually trying to organize people who want to be organized, they're going to try to exert political power to do that work for them. That is what we're saying is wrong. That is what has led to all this freelance busting. That is what we're trying to stop.
Mm. A little bit out of your piece, it was looking, you know, the nitty gritty of the New Jersey proposal. They had wanted you guys to essentially meet some criteria that was very vague and kind of impossible to meet. So can you tell me about like some of the specific issues that you had with the New Jersey proposal? And, you know, it would have made it impossible for businesses to comply with it because they introduced vague criteria. So it was just very similar to AB5. Is that what the New Jersey proposal was all about?
So there's a lot of things the lawyers have pointed out. The public comments are starting to come out now. The process in New Jersey is you go and testify. That's a verbal public comment. And then you can submit a written public comment. But unlike at the federal level, where those written public comments automatically go online and everyone can see them, they don't have to do that in the state of New Jersey. We have to get hold of them. And we're working on that. And we've gotten a number of them from the attorneys that have filed them. And I've posted 3 or 4 of those now on freelancebusting.com. So people can read them. You want to read a 105-page public comment written by a top lawyer? It's right there for you. Enjoy. And have a good bottle of wine with you ready, because it's a lot. But I'll give you just 2 examples that I think people can find pretty easy to understand of some of the many examples these lawyers are giving when they're explaining what is wrong with what New Jersey's trying to do. The first example, and we heard some oral testimony about this at the public hearing too. The first example the attorneys are saying is that New Jersey's trying to say that if a company insists on an independent contractor following any law at all, that's indicative of control and they should be an employee. And what we heard at the public hearing was people who work with independent contractor truckers saying, so if we tell a driver we expect them to follow the speed limit, now they're by definition an employee. That's just stupid, right? I mean, regular people can understand. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So we have lawyers talking about things like that. One of the lawyers also pointed out that the state of New Jersey is trying to say that if the company is the first person to generate a contract, even if the independent contractor then negotiates that contract, which I've been doing for over 20 years, a publisher will say, hey, we want you to write a story. Here's our contract. I'm going through it right now with a new client. I'm looking at that contract going, I don't like those couple of clauses. I'm going to send this back and change this. You negotiate it. You come to an agreement. You move on. You work together. That's how business is done. Well, one of the lawyers pointed out that the state of New Jersey is trying to say, if the company is the one that generates the initial contract, doesn't matter what happens after that, it's indicative of control and the person is an employee. And that lawyer too said, that's ridiculous. You're going to paralyze the ability to do any business whatsoever. So it's these kinds of things. And there's many more examples that, again, there are so many pages of lawyer written public comments on freelancebusting.com. People can get into this for days if they want to and go down this rabbit hole. But that's the level of stupid that we are dealing with at this point in how they are trying to force us out of self-employment and into the status of unionizable employee.
See, that's just so outrageous. I mean, yes, a freelance journalist, and like, what do they want you to do? Do they want you to, like, the independent contractor to draft up their own contract and then pitch it to companies? Like, what the hell?
I'm happy to do that personally. I used to be the chairwoman of the contracts committee for the American Society of Journalists and Authors. I'm perfectly capable of doing that. Lawyers can teach people how to do that. It's not that complicated. But the ridiculousness of this, the total lack of understanding about how people function every day from regulators who are trying to regulate us, that I have to explain this kind of stuff to people who are in positions of power is outrageous to me. And it happens not just at the state level, Kat. A couple of us, there's a great, great grassroots advocate in California. Her name is Karen Anderson. She started a Facebook group too called Freelancers Against AB5. They've been fighting like hell out there. They're still trying to figure out how to get that law repealed. And when we, the two of us, testified before the House of Representatives committee a couple of years ago, we're sitting there. I had studied for days trying to make sure I knew every possible thing that any of the smartest lawmakers in the country could ask me about this, because I didn't want to seem stupid on camera. I wanted to make sure I knew what I was talking about. And we get there, and the primary sponsor of the PRO Act is reading off an index card. I'm telling you, the man did not know the difference between AB5 and ABC. He didn't understand the difference between the name of the California law and the regulatory language buried within it. That was in his own federal bill too. Didn't know what it was. He was talking to his own witness and she just kept shaking her head. She was with a union-backed think tank and she just kept saying, yeah, I'm going to have to get back to you on that, Congressman. I don't know what you mean. So the ridiculousness of this goes to the core. It just goes to the core of how incompetent some of these people are. And we need just better leadership that understands what they're doing and how the world works.
Yeah, and maybe out of touch. I think also something that we have to, I mean, it's on the rise. Freelance work is on the rise, especially after COVID-19. I'm sure. Yeah, you know that everybody, this is a modern way of working post-COVID. So in your view, is this a case of government overreach? Are there legitimate concerns? We kind of have already talked about this, worker misclassification, scum is going to scum. The overreach that's going on here, Are they going to be successful, being that there is this change in administrations? Obviously, you mentioned the PRO Act. That was under President Biden, right?
They're trying to fix it now in Washington. There was a great white paper. Again, I read a lot of wonky, geeky stuff that other people probably won't read, but it is on freelancebusting.com if people want to read it. U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy, he's the Republican who currently chairs the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. He wrote this white paper back in the spring where he talked about, we really need to move the country to one of two different tests. The first test he talked about is what's known as the common law language, or some people call it the IRS test. And the other language he talked about was language from the first Trump administration that they had put forward the first time President Trump was in office through his Labor Department. I agree with what Bill Cassidy said. And when I have gone to Congress, it's to testify in favor of this bill called the Modern Worker Empowerment Act, which is based on that Trump language from the first Trump administration. Again, people are editing and changing words and moving words around, but that's what the Modern Worker Empowerment Act is. It's intended to stop things like the PRO Act from inflicting this madness on the whole country. So that would stop it at the federal level, and we're working on getting that through. Anybody listening to this can call their U.S. House of Representatives member or their two state senators and say, please support the Modern Worker Empowerment Act. That would help everybody from the federal level. It's not going to solve the problem in these states where we are fighting, like California and New Jersey. We're going to have to fight them at the state level too. And that's what we're doing. In New Jersey, I think we're pretty well positioned. Hopefully the public pressure is building to a crescendo that's loud enough that the governor will simply rescind this stupid proposal and we can all move on with our lives and hopefully get some better leadership in place after our gubernatorial election this November. But short of that, the power of the attorneys, the qualifications of the attorneys that I have seen filing public comments, these are some of the biggest heavy hitters in the country filing public comments in New Jersey, because they understand if it gets through here, it's going to cause a problem anywhere. They are ready to fight. I fully anticipate the state being sued and being embroiled in problems. And again, we have members of our state legislature already saying they're going to introduce a joint resolution to overturn this. So I think there's going to be quite a lot of fighting here in the state of New Jersey if the governor doesn't back down and accept the public will, which I get it. It doesn't align with what some of his biggest campaign donors want, but this is what people want. As you just said, the freedom to earn a living in whatever way works best for us. This should not be a partisan issue. It's ridiculous that this anywhere has become a partisan issue. This is how America rolls. We're all about different strokes for different folks. Anybody trying to take that freedom away, all of us should be standing up and saying no.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the show here. Any final message you would like to convey of importance for defending freelance rights?
I think the most important thing people need to understand is this is actually under attack. It's really hard to wrap your brain around it, right? How could they attack this? This is just fundamental to who we are as Americans, this freedom to be your own boss, if that's what you choose to be. And if you look at the Gallup data, 2/3 of Americans say, we'd like to be our own boss. This is a big part of the American dream that is being attacked by people trying to take that option away. So just understanding that it's going on, I think, is a huge part of winning this battle. And it's why I'm so grateful to people like you, Kat, who give so much time to us to talk on shows like yours, where we can explain it to people in a way that hopefully I've made it easy to understand.
Oh, yes, definitely. And, you know, here in Illinois, I'll have to keep an eye on it. I watch, you know, bills being introduced all the time. And I'd imagine that they're going, because it used to be this whole statewide measure that they were going to take to kind of introduce an AB5. It was like a little bit watered down. But now they're saying that we're just going to apply it to Chicago Uber drivers and Lyft drivers. And I can't help but feel like even these Uber drivers and Lyft drivers who are kind of getting behind this, you know, you're a 1099 employee, you're entering into a contract, you're doing that knowing you're a 1099 and knowing that you're not going to get full-time benefits. So I don't quite understand why, you know, what the hubbub is all about, where these
If you look at the data from those drivers, and there's two sets of data is the way I think about it. There's industry sponsored data, which is going to have, you know, people will question it a little bit as maybe potentially being biased. But there's also stuff like Pew Research Center data, which most people take as pretty decent, trying to be, you know, they don't have a dog in the fight. All of it that has come back says the majority of app-based workers want to remain independent contractors. The industry-based data puts it at, I think it's about 77% in the last one I saw that want to remain independent contractors. The Pew Research Center percentage was a little lower, but it was still way, way up above, I think, 60% saying they want to remain independent contractors. So again, this isn't coming from the majority of independent contractors in any industry. The reason we keep talking about Uber, Lyft is because that's one of the primary targets of these union organizers. They want to organize those drivers, whether the drivers like it or not. And that's not me saying that. That was the testimony of a Democratic Party witness in the U.S. House of Representatives, Congressman Kevin Kiley of California, who is one of my heroes. That man should be fitted with a cape and tights. He's a superhero fighting for independent contractors. He was questioning the Democratic Party witness. She was a professor from Georgetown University, and people can go find the clip. Her name is Professor Katie Wells. It's on my Substack on freelancebusting.com. Kevin Kiley said to her, "Do you believe these app-based workers should be reclassified as employees against their will?" Her answer was yes, in Congress, on camera. It's right there on video. Anybody can see it. So the point, again, Kat, this isn't coming from most of the people it will affect. This is coming from people who want to affect us, and it's not right.
And if it's not going to be done in outright, like in manipulation form, so I think that it's some of these Uber and Lyft drivers, they're going to trot them out. I know it. That's just what I'm waiting for in Springfield. It's only a matter of time. I'm sure next legislative session, they're going to pass it. Where Uber and Lyft, and they're probably going to water it down to where it just pertains to Chicago Uber and Lyft drivers, but then next session, they'll do a statewide thing. But they'll trot out, you know, a few of these Uber and Lyft drivers who say, like, I'm so sad that I don't get, you know, healthcare or whatever, or employee benefits. But they take the minority. It's not the majority. As you cited, all of the Pew Research and, you know, what the research shows, they take out the minority, they manipulate those people to go testify, and, you know, it's always feels over reels. And, you know, the reality is you're attacking our fundamental rights to be our own bosses and to be entrepreneurial, and that's the spirit of America.
I've never heard feels over reels. That's such a younger person. I'm going to adopt. Can I say that? I'm over 50. Are over 50 people?
Yeah, feels over reels. And it's outright manipulation. I mean, they just outright say it. They say, okay, well, if we can't manipulate you, we're just going to do it.
And yeah. So here's the thing. I've read every book about this. All the opposition books, all of their literature, they all say the same thing, which is when you look within that app-based community, you tend to see three different kinds of people. One of the types is what you just described. It's people who are struggling in life to put basic needs. They don't have the ability to put food on the table. Generally speaking, it's because there's a lot of problems going on in their lives. Maybe they don't speak English. That limits their job opportunities. Maybe they don't have a basic education, even a high school diploma. That limits job opportunities. Maybe there's some other things going on in life that are limiting their ability to have a job opportunity. So those folks are in trouble. Independent contractor status, generally the least of their troubles, though they've got a lot of troubles going on, and this is just one thing happening in their day. The second of the three groups these books tend to identify, and these are people on the opposition side. These are people on the freelance busting side. The second group they tend to identify doing that kind of app-based work are people who want to make a little money on a side hustle. Maybe they, whatever, their job's not keeping up with the pace of inflation, or maybe they want to, whatever, put in a pool. They want to go make some extra money. They'll turn on the app and go do it. Then you have people who are doing it as their full-time thing. That's a very small minority of these app-based workers, according to all the research that's out there. And those folks are generally approaching it like they're trying to game that system and do it like a business and optimize it to make the most money they can. They're a different breed of app-based worker. And they're, again, not even close to the majority of them. So it's not that struggling people don't exist. And it's not that we shouldn't have empathy for that. We should have empathy and we should try to help those people. But again, wiping out everybody else's ability to have freedom and choices is not the way you solve that problem. There's other ways to solve that problem, and we should be focusing on those other ways.
A freelancing is what you make it. And typically the top of the crop there, that third type of person you described, they are definitely not going to want to, like, you do this full time. I do freelancing full time. I could not imagine, you know, going to work for the man. You know
what I mean? Did you ever do it? Were you ever a staffer anyplace?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. And I got out of it, and it was the best decision of my life.
Me too. I was a staffer for about 10 years at newspapers and magazines. And I realized several things one day. One of them was that some of those freelancers were earning more than I was. And I was the number two editor. I was an executive editor at a national magazine. And some of our freelancers were earning more than I was. And I looked around and went, what am I doing? I think I'm good enough to do it this other way. Turned out I am. That was one of the best decisions of my life. And as you say, Kat, it's what you make of it. It's not for everybody. There are people who are better off as traditional employees. There are people who are better off as traditional employees in unions. They're not the kind of people who are going to walk in with an attitude like mine and slap a contract down and say, I'm not signing this. And here's why. That's not how they roll. That's not who they are. And that's fine. We are all in this together, just trying to earn a living in whatever way works best for us. That's what our laws should be protecting. That's why we're trying to stop this.
Kim, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you. Find out more at freelancebusting.com.
Thank you so much, Kat. It's been great to get to know you. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Yep. Thank you so much, folks, for tuning in. This has been Conservative Kat. And be sure to subscribe right now. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. Thank you, Kim, for shedding light on this critical issue. Her advocacy reminds us that protecting our freedom in the workplace isn't just an economic matter. Okay, this is a matter of principle. Freelancers are an essential part of our American story, and it's up to us to stand with them. You've been listening to Conservative Kat.